Members, we will call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. Representative Mazerall, have you had a chance to review the minutes from our last meeting? And if so, would you like to move those minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move.
Representative Mazerall moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of the minutes being adopted signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. With that, we will get right into it. Representative Vogel, welcome to the committee. I will go ahead and move House File 2152. If you could go ahead and tell us what we need to know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. And House File 2152 is something that I became aware of while taking my continuing ed classes for real estate, for my real estate license, and found that there was a little, what we might call a glitch in the current statute pertaining to real estate agents who happen to own rental property and who happen to maybe manage it or for themselves. And so with me today, I do have a testifier. Paul Eckert is here from the Association of Realtors, and I'm going to let Paul explain it a little bit to you, and we can go from there.
Mr. Eckert, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Eggert with the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and just want to thank Representative Vogel for bringing this bill forward, and Mr. Chair, you for giving us a hearing. The bill is pretty straightforward. It addresses, as Representative Vogel mentioned, the issue of real estate licensee owned and managed personal property that is separate and apart from a licensee's business activities. Currently, as Representative Vogel mentioned, real estate licensees are held to a different standard when it comes to the oversight and regulation of private property that they own and manage for themselves. And so you could have two parcels of property, rental property, for instance, side by side, Mr. Chair, and just because one owner happens to be a real estate licensee, they're forced to have that private business supervised by their broker, and the property next door that could be owned by somebody who does not hold a real estate license, they don't have to abide by that same requirement. So the legislation before you simply clarifies in Chapter 82, the real estate licensing statute, that for property that's owned and managed by a licensee as part of his or her own private holdings does not have to be supervised by the broker. Any other requirements, whether they be local ordinances, landlord-tenant statutes, would all obviously still apply. So this simply has to do with the supervision by the broker. We're not aware of any opposition to the bill. We shared the language with the Department of Commerce. There's no opposition from the department, and we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Questions from members? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Seeing nobody, with that, Representative Vogel, do you want to have the last word?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for hearing this bill, and I know my fellow realtors out there who panicked when they heard of this will be very appreciated.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2152 be passed and sent to the General Register. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel, and thank you, Mr. Egger. Representative Sanders, we will next do House File 1998, the Sanders bill. Representative Sanders, proceed when you are ready if you would like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 1998. Though someone could help me out where this is going.
I think it's going to the General Register.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 1998 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. House File 1998 is designed to resolve some confusion in current statute caused by what we think is really kind of an imprecise use of the term health plan company. Health plan company actually includes insurance products that are specifically excluded from the definition of the health plan. So through imprecise use of health plan company definition or term, products designed solely to provide disability or income protection or per diem, fixed indemnity, non-expense incurred basis, or accident only or long-term care products are actually caught up in statutory references to health plan companies while they're expressly excluded from the definition of a health plan. So the use of the term health plan company is used at least 130 separate times in statute, and that results in the inclusion of some insurance products used over 130, referenced over 130 different times that are specifically excluded from the definition of that health plan. So we just want some clarification here that allows several products that are excluded from the definition of the health plan to also be excluded from the definition of the health plan company. Those are clauses 1, 4, 8, and 9 in 62A. They cover limited disability or income protection coverage, solely provide payments on per diem, fixed indemnity, or non-expense incurred basis, accident-only coverage, and long-term care policies designed and defined in 62A.46 or 62S.01. So this bill also is prospective, as you'll see in your packet. It's not prevent the legislature from including the excluded products in the future, but we'd have to make a conscious decision to do so.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Members, any questions for the author? Representative Sanders, do you have any testifiers here? Anybody that wants to come down and speak in favor, or anybody in the audience that wants to come and speak in favor or opposed to this bill?
We do have a testifier if we need one for additional technical questions. However, if there aren't any questions, I think we're going to be okay.
Well, I'm not seeing any questions. If any of the members of the committee want to have, I assume it's Mr. Tennyson. If anybody wants to have him come up, we can. Otherwise, seeing no questions, I think we can go ahead and vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just renew my motion. The House file 1998 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Representative Sanders renews his motion that House file 1998 be passed and sent to the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. 1998 is passed. Thank you, Representative Sanders. Representative Loon, House file 2441.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 2441 be adopted by the committee and passed on to the General Register. And with that, I do have a very short amendment I'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape I'd like it.
Is this the amendment that gets it in the same shape as the Senate?
That's correct.
File? Okay.
That's correct. It's the A1 amendment, and I think it's in everyone's packet.
Everyone have the A1 amendment? Everyone should. Any questions on the amendment? If not, why don't we vote on the A1 amendment and get it in the shape the author wants it. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Loon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I will very briefly describe this. It's a very straightforward bill and not a lot of technicality here. This bill strictly makes some clarifications to our statute, which allows mature drivers, so ages 55 and older, to obtain a 10% discount on their car insurance if they take a defensive driving course. And so it's an 8-hour course, and then they have to have a refresher course every 3 years, which is 4 hours in length, to maintain that 10% discount. It's my understanding this hasn't happened frequently, but once in a while someone may forget to take that refresher course. They lose the 10% discount, and that's been interpreted by some that they have to go back, start over, and take the full 8-hour course. People who teach this course indicate to me that that's not necessary. So this would allow, again, a mature driver to go back, if they've taken the original 8-hour course, to go back and do their refresher of 4-hour course to, again, have that policy discount reinstated, that 10% discount on their insurance policy. And the amendment just specified it applies to drivers age 55 and older for the initial defensive driving course and the discount, and then you would first be eligible for the refresher at age 58. So the amendment just clarifies that age. And that's about all there is to it.
Members, any questions? Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lewin, I think you might have just touched on this, and perhaps Mr. Pender could address it as well. We amended line 1.9. A person that was 55, we changed that to 58. Do we also need to do the same thing in line 1.6?
Representative Lewin, or do we have Mr. Pender? Do you want to enlighten us on that?
That's just for the refresher course, just to be clear.
I would defer to Mr. Pender if that's...
Could you repeat the question, please?
So in line 1.6, we say a person 55 years or older may retake the original course. Then line 1.9, we change that to 58. I just wanted to make sure that if we're changing it just for the course or if the ages need to be the same in this section of statute.
I think it's just for the... Mr. Pender.
I guess it looks to me as if that should be changed, too. I didn't think of that beforehand, but because someone wouldn't be... Well, I mean, I suppose someone who failed the original course at age 55 could be taking it again right away and not wait till they're age 58.
But, Mr. Pender, do we need to leave that at 55 because that's when the program starts for the defensive driving...
I'm inclined to say yes, that it should be left at 50. For the one on line 1.6 should be left at 55.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pender. I think we've got that resolved. Members, any questions about that or any other issue with this bill? Is there anyone in the audience that wants to come down and speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, with that, Representative Loon, do you want the final word?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just renewed my motion.
Representative Loon renews her motion that House File 2441, as amended, be passed and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Loon. Thank you, Mr. Pender, and thank you, Representative Johnson. Who do we have next year? Representative Lemire. Welcome to our committee, Representative Lemire. I will go ahead and move House File 2463. If you want to please proceed and tell us why this is a good bill and we should vote for it, if in fact that's the case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2463 takes care of a problem that I had in my district, particularly during the shutdown. I had many retail on and off sale establishments contacting me saying that even though they had sent their money in to receive their buyer's card, that they hadn't received their buyer's card. And the distributors also didn't acknowledge that they have their buyer's card, and they weren't able to receive their supplies to continue operating. So what this legislation does is it allows the holder of an on-off-sale license, a holder of an on- and off-sale license, who is in good standing with the state of Minnesota, to continue receiving the alcohol and if the state is unable to provide them with a buyer's card and until the state is able to give them a buyer's card. So it allows them to keep operating and it allows them to keep doing their job and gaining revenue and to pay their bills.
Thank you, Representative Lemire. You have a visitor?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. If I could, Sarah Pasek from the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association is here to testify.
Welcome back. Please identify yourself for the record and start when you're ready.
Thank you. I'm Sarah Pasek. I represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverages Association. We support this bill. What the bill does is when a liquor store or a bar is issued a license, they're issued that license from a city or a county. It's not issued by the state, and so they have to comply with the regulations of the city or county, whoever their licensing jurisdiction is, undergo a background check and other things. Then they take that valid license and provide that to the Department of Public Safety, and they're issued what's called a buyer's card. And the buyer's card is something that distributors and wholesalers have a list of everybody with valid buyer's cards, and so they know that when they're making a delivery to a liquor store or a bar, that it that liquor store or bar has met with all the laws and is in compliance, and it's a legal place for them to make their delivery. So the liquor stores and bars like having the buyer's cards. The wholesalers and distributors like the buyer's cards. They know where to deliver. So what happened during the shutdown last year was there were a number of liquor stores and bars that had valid licenses that had been issued by the jurisdiction that was their licensing authority, and they had sent in their money to public safety, and through processing, the buyer's card wasn't issued before the shutdown. And so they were in good standing, they were fully licensed, but they didn't have the buyer's card, and so they weren't able to receive any ongoing shipments. So once they were running out of product, they weren't able to get new deliveries. And the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association actually brought a petition in front of the special master last July on this issue, and before it was ruled on, the shutdown ended. So we support the bill and would like to see it go forward should there be another shutdown.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the testifier, I guess reading this language, and I understand, and I really don't have a problem with it, but it's just reading this here, it says if the state is unable to issue a card, and we mentioned here that it's because what happened during the shutdown and created some problems for many local businesses, they weren't able to buy it. But what if there's another reason other than the shutdown that the state's unable to issue the card, and maybe there's an issue with that person's license or whatever? Wouldn't this open up more than what you're trying to do here, that at any time that the state's unable to issue a card for maybe a valid reason that they're not giving it, that they have their license from the city and they can just sell without that card? Could we have other problems here besides that?
Ms. Bissett.
I think actually Mr. McCormick could probably answer that better. We didn't draft the bill. We're supportive of the concept. So I assume Mr. McCormick drafted it, but I guess I'm not positive.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, yes, this is drafted to be a little bit broader. In some of these shutdown bills, sometimes we refer to a state shutdown, and other times we have broader language, and I think the language has been different from one bill to another. In this case, the key is that without a valid license, you wouldn't be able to buy. You'd have to show a license if the state was unable to issue a card. The only two instances I've been able to identify where the state might not be able to issue a card would be a budget shutdown or if the state's computing system shut down and they were unable to issue cards.
So, Mr. McCormick, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that answers my question. I guess the only other concern I have here is this is like the number five or six that I've seen in various committees of anti-shutdown. Looks like we're planning for shutdown 2.0 coming up because there's a lot of these bills going through piecemeal that I guess I have concern about that. I mean, former Speaker Swigum said it best when about talking about putting government on autopilot. There's a lot of these bills that look like we're trying to do that to prevent us from having to do our jobs of passing passing a budget in a bipartisan fashion and doing the job we're supposed to be doing. So I guess that's just the only concern I'd have with it.
So noted. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, these bills are being placed in the context of a government shutdown. I look at it more of a global application of this, because in our Minnesota state statute right now for appraisers and insurance licensees and real estate licensees, we have a definition of what's called timely renewal. For example, in the state of Minnesota, real estate licenses expire on June 30th, appraiser licenses, builder contractor licenses, and if you, in good faith, submit your application for renewal to the Department of Commerce, by, and again, the example of real estate, by June 15th postmark, there is no lapse in your license. And this has been in statute long before we ever had the concepts of shutdown. And so what it does is it was put in statute, from my understanding, to help manage workload for the Department of Commerce, the renewing entity, that if for some reason they are unable to get those licenses out back into the hands of brokers and licensees by June 30th, there would not be a lapse in providing services to the buyers and sellers or other customers that they may have. I think that this is really the context that we should be looking at something like this at. Although this doesn't call for a specific timely renewal deadline, because these licenses are staggered where the others are on a prescribed statutory expiration date, perhaps something like that is what we should be looking at with this type of a bill and trying to manage it into quote-unquote state shutdown type language.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Members, any other questions? Representative Atkins.
Just quick, more housekeeping, Mr. Chair, than anything else. Is it, I missed the motion at the beginning. Are we moving the bill individually, or are we wrapping it into, what's your intent?
Well, Representative Atkins and members, I either didn't say this, or if I did, I misspoke. We're evidently sending the bill to public safety. It's, as far as I know, there's no intention to wrap it into anything else. It's just on its own, but public safety wants to see it, or it should go there. I don't know if they've requested it, but that's where we're, if it passes, that's where we're sending it.
And I, Mr. Chair, I don't have any reservations about sending it to public safety. That seems appropriate. It just, when liquor bills run on their own and end up on the floor before a liquor omnibus bill, sometimes liquor bills that run on their own become the liquor omnibus bill.
You know, Representative Atkins,
depending on your perspective on different issues, sometimes that's wonderful. Other times, not so much.
It's funny you should mention that, because I believe we do have an amendment.
I saw one floating around.
Apparently we don't.
Perhaps, Mr. Chair, it's not going to become the liquor omnibus bill, based on the chief author shaking his head violently.
No, there's not any intention to have this become the liquor omnibus bill, and as far as I know, no intention to have it be part of anything else. But Representative Atkins and members, I think that is a very valid concern, that sometimes those seemingly innocuous little liquor bills sometimes take on a life of their own. So with that, any other questions, members? Anybody else in the audience want to come down and speak for or against this bill? With that, Representative Lemire, last chance, you sure, no amendment?
No, it's good.
Then we'll give you the last word on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate your support.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2463 be passed and sent to public safety. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lemire, and thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Pizik. With that, Representative Dowd. Representative Dowd, do you want to go ahead and move your House File 2307?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I would move House File 2307 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a bill that has two sections to it. The first section basically would allow property and casualty insurers in the state of Minnesota to provide required notice of the guarantee fund protection, either at the time of application or at delivery of the policy. The current law states that the notice is to be provided at the time of application. So in instances where this was done over the phone or something, it's a fairly lengthy notice, and that it doesn't make it possible to read it over the phone. So it would just be provided with the policy when it's delivered. The second part of this bill would allow an insurer of a person involved in a motor vehicle accident to obtain a copy of the accident report upon submission of a written request. Current law requires insurers to obtain the signed authorization of a party to the accident to obtain the copy of the report. So basically, we would be just like the other 49 states that don't allow that or don't require that written notice or written permission. So joining me is Elaine Love from Farmers Insurance to talk a little bit more about those details.
Thank you, Ms. Love. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed when you're ready.
I'm Elaine, excuse me, Elaine Love with Farmers Insurance. Sorry, I'm fighting a cold here. Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to defer in a second to my colleague here, Doug Franzen. But when I was a claims adjuster and trying to determine liability and settle claims on a fair and fairly timely basis, there was a significant delay in obtaining the report. So we'd like to be able to speed that up. And on the provision for the guarantee fund notice, as Representative Dowd said, currently the law says simply at the time of sale, and that's not always a practical option. So we'd like to have the option to be in compliance and deliver this upon delivery.
Mr. Franzen.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Doug Franzen. I'm here on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers of America, a national trade association representing property casualty insurance companies. Thank you, Representative Dowd, for carrying this bill. As Ms. Love said, there are two sections, and I'd like to take them in reverse order, dealing with the accident report provision first. Mr. Chairman, if I ever get in an accident, and I have been in several in the course of my lifetime, I want three things to happen. The first of which is I want to be treated fairly by my insurance company. Secondly, I want it over as quickly as possible. And third, I want it done with the minimal inconvenience to me, to the insured, leaving the hassle. We believe this bill accomplishes at least two of those three goals, and it's left to us to be fair. Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, the issue of notice is straightforward and has been said. There is an additional step under current Minnesota law, which is unusual, unique to Minnesota, that requires us to contact our insured, have them find the police report, get permission, and run through that channel. The point is the company, the insurance company, and the attorneys will get the reports in any event. The insured, at least from the insurance side, has a contractual duty to cooperate. They will give it to us because it's a necessary element of settling the claim. The quicker we get this, to the extent we can remove unnecessary steps, we can settle a claim and satisfy the customer quicker. This came about because there was a claims person who came into American Family from North Dakota and couldn't believe Minnesota law. We all looked at this. Mr. Chairman, we vetted this with a lot of people, the Minnesota Justice Foundation, other people, and frankly, everybody thinks this provision is a good idea. The second part of the bill, and I'm working in reverse order, is the guarantee fund notice. This follows some of the modernization work this committee has done in the past years, notably having the guarantee notice follow the medium in which an insurance sale is made. So if it's a telephone, you're supposed to give it over the telephone. If it's an internet sale, via internet. If it's an agent, give it to them in person, etc. It works very well with the exception of telephone sales. If you really have a problem with insomnia, look it up some night and read it. Simply what it means is that the guarantee association is there in case the insurance company can't pay its claims, and it'll take care of you. It takes a lot of ponderous language to accomplish that in the notice. Reciting that over the phone, we believe that there's just no comprehension for the consumer. The consumer doesn't care. It doesn't make any sense. So we think in this instance, it makes perfect sense to at delivery and give them a written notice so they can look at their leisure if they so choose. Mr. Chairman, one bit of disclosure, we've had some late-minute conversations with the Commerce Department. I don't believe Mr. Reich is here, but we may want to be working with them on a couple technical tweaks that they're suggesting, and both Commerce and the proponents of this bill, the stakeholders, said these are the types of things you can tweak on the way to the floor. Mr. Chairman, I know you like to have the bills totally tidy before they leave, but would ask for just the opportunity to do a few very small language tweaks with Commerce between now and the floor. Would ask your indulgence. With that, Mr. Chairman, members, would stand for questions.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Franzen, the part about the accident report, I thought these were public record. I had a friend of mine kind of up in the northwest suburbs had a car accident, and they said, well, who should we get for an attorney? I said, well, if I wanted to win the case, I'd either get Representative Mullery or Representative Atkins. But they were kind of too far away from where this person located. They want somebody more local, like within, you know, closer. Within a couple days, they had a pile of stuff from attorneys saying, we want to represent you and we can do a good job for you and those types of things. So how did they get that accident report?
Mr. Franzen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, I am not sure. They didn't get it from the insurance company. That's what I know. Because we are bound, we have to make a request to the Department of Public Service and Driver and Vehicle Services. We have to get the request through the insured. And frankly, Mr. Chairman, I'm not an expert on privacy. I have seen those things, and I've asked that same question. I don't know how everyone in the world seems to find out for solicitation and other purposes that this is out there. I'm not sure it is the police report per se they get. I'm as puzzled as you are, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids.
Representative Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it is, and Mr. Franzen, you got the police report and you got the accident report. Are they getting the police report but not the accident report? And so you have to sign for the accident report?
Well, Mr. Franzen or Mr. Pender, can you shed any light on how that works and what's available and what's public record? And does Representative Davids need an attorney here?
Mr. Chair, no and no.
Thank you, Mr. Pender.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That cleared that up for me.
Thank you. Members, other questions? Mr. Franzen, when you mentioned tweaks, what are we talking about with tweaks? A comma, a period? What's the nature of the tweaks?
Several words. What we decided we needed more discussion on was, since the issue at hand is telephone sales, Commerce suggested, should we say telephone sales? That is one. The other conversation we have had with them is it more appropriate at the time of delivery of the policy or prior to the delivery of policy in a separate notice? These are kind of late-breaking conversations. We just found about them last night. And it's my belief, Mr. Chairman, that I can't speak for Commerce, but if I could, I'd say it's probably their belief too, that neither one of these issues are deal breakers, and they really don't affect the substance of the bill.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps, as we've done with some other bills, we can just have the proponents send members of the committee or the chair and lead, whatever is comfortable with you, Mr. Chair, about what the tweaks or changes might be. And then within the chairman's discretion, he can determine whether or not to bring the bill back. But if it's truly tweaks, I would expect it'll just go on its merry way.
We all love tweaks. Representative Atkins, I think that's a good idea. And maybe if we have, is it okay with you if we have Mr. Reich get a hold of you and get a hold of me and let us know what the tweaks are and make sure everybody's okay with it? Mm-hmm. And if there is not okayness there, then we can we'll figure out what to do at that point. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to suggest that, building on what Representative Atkins said, that if you're passing it to the general calendar, that you just hold on the bill long enough so you don't have to actually call it back from the general calendar, as long as you hold on to it. And if they work quickly on it, because it's not going to come up on the general calendar probably anyhow in the next week. So,
no. Representative Nelson?
Nothing else does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was basically going to say the same thing I was going to ask, too, is where is it sitting in the Senate? Because we had the same similar situations in a couple other committees I'm on, and it's not quite there on the Senate yet. Give the Senate a chance to work on it and maybe go to conference to fix it.
Well, Representative Nelson and Representative Mullery, I kind of had the same thought about where is it in the Senate and can that be fixed, and then we could just adopt the Senate language on the floor or whatever you and the Commerce Commissioner or Commerce Department work out. What is, Mr. Franzen, and what is the status of this bill in the Senate?
Mr. Chairman, members, in the Senate, the
this legislation, which has the identical language, and we had the same disclosure, and Mr. Reich was in the Senate to affirm this, passed out of the Senate Commerce Committee unanimously and was sent to the Judiciary Committee.
Well, then, if that's all right, Representative Atkins and Nelson and Mullery and committee members, why don't we pass this, send it to the floor, and let the Senate Judiciary Committee adopt, Representative Dowd, if this is okay with you, let them put in the tweaks. If they are major substantial tweaks, we can always ask to have it back. We'll check with Mr. Reich and see where things are. Do any members have any heartburn over that? Mr. Franzen.
Mr. Chairman, and we are more than happy to, together with Commerce, inform the chair and Representative Atkins of the tweaks. And I suspect the two issues I mentioned are the only ones, and they're fairly simple.
Well, thank you, Representative Dowd. Well, first of all, anybody else want to come down and speak to this bill, either for or against it? Members, any other questions? Then Representative Dowd will give you the last word, and we'll, if you want to renew your motion, we will plan on sending this to the General Register, and we'll wait and see what the tweaks are from the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your indulgence with the late-breaking potential just technical changes that will need to be made to the bill, and I think we've figured out a reasonable way to handle those. That being said, I think the bill is fairly simple and straightforward. So at this time, I'll renew my motion that 2307 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. Representative Dowd renews his motion that 2307, House File 2307, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Vout and members. And with that, we are adjourned.